Audio version of Michael Leitman's blog. May 8, 2023. 22 Forces of Nature. Question. The article The Letters of Rav Hamman Yunus Saban allegorically tells that each letter comes to the Creator and says that he should start building the world precisely with it. However, the Creator answers, "Yes, you are good, but I will not start with you." What process are we talking about? What does it mean that the letters come to the Creator and each asks that the creation of the world would start with it? There are 22 such signs. Answer: yes, there are only 22 forces of nature that in combination with each other create the entire universe, absolutely all the worlds, and everything that fills them and saturates them. It comes from just 22 letters. There are 5 additional letters that do not decide anything, but are simply written at the end of words. From Cab TV's introduction of the Book of Zohar, April 23, 2023. The uniqueness of Hebrew. Hebrew is the language of the spiritual realms. It is the code of the connections of spiritual forces, the forces of our soul, in all possible combinations. If we take the Bible from the first word in the beginning, God created in the beginning, until the last word Israel, then the whole combination of these letters represents the path that the human soul must go through, the soul of each one in its spiritual development. Each person must go from his first to last point, which is called Israel, that is, the point of our connection with the Creator. Question: isn't it scary that people use Hebrew now? Answer: no, of course not. What do they understand? It doesn't matter. But in principle, all the same, to the extent of spiritual attainment, all people will use Hebrew. It is impossible to describe the spiritual world with other icons, in a different sequence, and in a different combination. This is the code. Therefore it has not changed for thousands of years. You can do what you want with other languages, but Hebrew does not change. You can take a book that was written 2, 3, or 4,000 years ago and read it calmly if you know this language. There won't be any problems for you. You won't find a single word unknown to you there. From Cab TV's I Got a Call. The Uniqueness of Hebrew, January 9, 2011. If this is your first time, you are forgiven. Question: if a student who constantly engages in Kabbalah misses a lesson twice in a row, how is this recorded in his spiritual advancement? Answer: this is recorded in his internal information data, and then it will be harder for him. It is like when Adam fell into sin. The first time he tasted the forbidden apple and liked it, it was not a descent because then he did not know what it was. The second time, when he consciously could not restrain himself and tasted it again, this is called sin. Even in our daily life, if a person commits an offense for the first time, we take it into account. He had no informational record of what would happen to him. He could not foresee that this would happen. For the first time, they make a certain concession for him. But the second time, that is it? Because after the second time, it is almost impossible to stop. There is a clear record that this is good, it is worth doing, and I am going for it. Therefore, skip classes. Once it could happen, but not twice in a row. No way. We should be very afraid of this because this approach weakens us, very much. A person usually thinks, well, it did not work out, I could not. And off we go, rolled down, back to this world. By committing an offense twice, a person gets used to it. Even in the material world, everyone knows this. You will not be shown leniency for not attending lessons or be given free passes and have everything fine after that. It does not depend on the teacher. I give you the spiritual law. If you want it, follow it. If you do not want it, do not. There is a law. Where are you going to jump? With the Creator, These things do not work. From Cab TV's I Got a Call. To Damage One's Destiny, January 21, 2011. Improve the world or change yourself? Comment: a person's main problem is that he is not tied to higher coordinates. When you say that our world does not exist, that it is just an illusion, the question arises, where am I? My response: nothing can be done. There is a methodology for this. So it is necessary to gradually introduce a person into this, to explain, and to give him the opportunity to explore how to manage his qualities. All this is given to us, initially. Everyone can and must attain the truth. This must be learned. All the suffering in the world pushes us to do just that. It does not push us to improve our world, this small sphere in which we exist. There is no need for that. We have to change ourselves so as to go out into the outer sphere, and then into a more external sphere, and into an even more external sphere. And if we start improving our little sphere instead, and we want to stay inside it, we only get the blows of nature, which try to push us out like a cherry stone. This is what we feel today in all our actions in the world. Therefore, we do not need to change the world or even improve society, but rather we need to help a person reach the next degree of existence with a completely different screen in another world, in another dimension. You do not have to do anything else, just this. Everything else will only lead to additional suffering and to the postponement of the end. It will distance the good ascent. Our world aspires only to this, and we will definitely come to this. But it all depends on the amount of suffering and the length of time it takes to realize that in the end we need to do something reasonable, that is, first figure out what nature has planned for us. From Cab TV's I Got a Call, The Illusion of the World, February 1, 2011. Illusion of the World. Comment: looking at a person or an object, I feel them, as you say, through the interaction of forces. But I perceive these objects as a visual, illusory image, which you call a screen. My response: the fact is that we perceive our natural screen we were born with. The interaction of forces draws a multidimensional picture of the world on it. That is, we create flat screens in ourselves, like a computer screen or a movie screen, which are located inside our world. Our world itself is also a screen, only it is three-dimensional, and voluminous, like 3D technologies or other latest techniques. There are 125 such spherical screens, meaning spheres nested one into another. We are in the smallest inner sphere. This screen, that was initially given to us, automatically and in which we imagine ourselves as existing, is called our world. It is created by only two forces, reception and bestowal, at the very minimum level of their interaction. If we can develop them, and raise ourselves up so that the force of bestowal prevails over the force of reception, then we will expand and enter the next sphere, the next screen, where we will feel ourselves living, but in a completely different form. That is, we will feel ourselves, our qualities, and the entire environment completely differently. This is called the upper world. Then we move on to the next state, and the next one, and so on. All these states overlap each other, and they do not interfere with us, like if you were in a movie theater and see on the screen how you sit and watch a movie, and in that movie, you see how you sit and watch another movie, and so on. And in this way, 125 screens inwardly. Comment: everything I feel and see around me is actually the interaction of forces within me. But I see it on my internal screen. In fact, this screen is just an illusion through which I can somehow hold on to the forces that exist behind it. My response: it is very difficult to imagine this for a person who does not feel it. You just feel like you are in our reality. You draw it, meaning you create it with your thoughts and forces. In fact, it does not exist. After all, 125 concentric spheres of attainment do not exist outside of you. You draw them, you create them. This is a very complex science. Therefore, it is necessary to gradually get used to such an action, enter it, and get used to it. Then you suddenly feel that everything really is arranged in this way, and that is how you live. From CapTV's I Got a Call. Illusion of the World, February 1, 2011. Truth. Question: what is the real truth? Answer: if we start from below, from us, then it does not exist because we are constantly changing and we do not have a foundation on which we can build the truth. Truth is verity. Truth stems from our root that we all originate from. Everything that exists in our root, as in a point, is the truth. You can say, if this is already at the root, why should I focus on it? But you have nothing else to direct yourself to. You came from there. You do not know anything other than that, you cannot invent or imagine anything other than that. Therefore, what is at the root is in absolute agreement, symbiosis, harmony, and complementation to each other. It forms the concept of root, basis, which for you is truth, veracity. Just that. You cannot invent anything else. Nothing can come to your mind because you are only a descendant of this root. Therefore, the attainment of the root is the attainment of the truth. From CapTV's I Got a Call. Truth, January 9, 2011. Hatred. Question: what is hatred? Answer: hatred is when I want to see the other person not die, not disappear, but suffer in full accordance with my ideas about suffering. I do not want him to die. No, absolutely not. I wish him such sensations that I will now come up with especially for him so that he remains in them. Comment: in fact, it is like sadism. My response: this is such a high form of relationship that is opposite to love, one against the other. To opposite forms of attitude to the other person, to a being, to nature, to the creator, no matter to whom. From CapTV's I Got a Call. Hatred, January 27, 2011. New Life 260. The challenges and difficulties of youth.
Hello, and thanks for joining us on the New Life Show with Dr. Michael Lightman. Hello, Dr. Lightman. Hello, Nitza. Hello. And what we're doing on this show is we're trying to find out how can we make our life better. Now, our life consists of relationships with the people around us. And each time we try to zoom in on a certain relationship, understand its general direction, and to correspondingly learn how to manage our life accordingly in order to have it good. And this time we'd like to focus on the relationship between parents and adolescents. Nitza, take it away. Yeah, today we'd like to talk about different behaviors, problematic phenomena that we as parents experience with our teens, and we'd like to better understand why do these things happen, and maybe if we understand, then we'll be able to better deal with the problem and maybe even find solutions. So, our first topic for today is taking risks. Teenagers always liked living on the edge. But it seems like today's teenagers are even more inclined to the extreme, taking risks even more than before. Because in that, they feel life without touching the limit, the boundary, touching something that's the edge, they don't feel that they're in something. We always feel the world in terms of light and darkness and the contrast between things. So, unless we reach something If we see that after that, then that's it. There's something very good or very bad. Without the limit, I don't feel that I exist. We live inside the boundaries of our senses. And therefore, this is what might seem to us as, okay, that this is the limit for us. But for them, it's not the limit nor the edge in any way. What, their boundaries are broader? Their boundaries are... Well, when I was, back in my days, when I was a teenager, there was no divorce. There was no living together before the wedding. There was no drugs and more things like that. In general, the entire perception was, I'd say, very primitive, very superficial. Today, everything's so intermingled and mixed with the different cultures, along with all those things that they learn from each other. I don't think that today there are any boundaries. I don't. But this is what we feel as parents. Yeah, that there aren't any. They themselves are looking for the limit, and they can't find it. They don't find it, because the world became round, and they too are as if spread on the entire planet. They don't feel any boundaries. The planet's round. Where's the limit? No limit. That's how they feel, and I understand them. Because in the past, there was a city to leave your city for another city. Then, beyond the boundaries of your own country, to go abroad. Who went abroad? Only business people or something. You go abroad and come back. Afterwards, it became more and more common, and afterwards, there came different movies and TV and internet, and you know, it's unlimited. It's limitless. I see that I can't whatsoever interest my children in anything or my grandchildren. No, I can't. Ah, grandma, okay, grandpa, okay, as if, you know, they have pity on me if they look at me for a moment. For them, it's all like, yeah, yeah, they know in advance that it exists and that that's how it is. I can bring them whatever it is. For them, it's no innovation. It's hard to live in such a world. It's hard. They have no innovations, they have no surprises. For us, it was, I don't know, what kind of chocolate can you bring them? We had just one type of chocolate. What movie, what something can you show them? You went to watch Exodus 5 times? Really, so how can we relate to them? They're smart, and that's it. If we want to find some kind of connection with them, we need to rise to their boundaries and limits. To feel what they feel? Yeah? And even more. Because if you want to build something for them, then I need to be more developed. Of course, and that's how it always was. We are the first generation in which children are really smarter than their parents. We see it in computers, in everything, in technology, and the way things are built and made, all the different connections and ties between everything. To them it's clear. To us it isn't. And I see it everywhere I go, on myself. I come someplace, I talk to the proprietor, and I say, okay, my son, he'll come, he'll open the computer, and he'll take care of it. It's in the print shop and different things. We need to leave this world already. That's how it is. They were born into such a new special generation where they precede their parents in what? In that the parents will not be able to prepare an infrastructure for this generation. Always the older generation prepared the infrastructure for the next generation. Workplaces, different kinds of development, etc., etc., progress. Now, we didn't build anything for them. We built nothing for them, as if they're in an empty world. Now the entire industry is coming to an end. Economy and finance is coming to an end. The family is in an unclear state of affairs. Culture, education, knowledge, that too. They look at us through the eyes of, what did you prepare for us? Nothing. We're in a void. There's this kind of feeling, only they can't express it. They don't exactly understand it. And neither do we, but I'm a bit more explaining the situation. And so, it's the first time in history that something like that happened, that we and they are facing an open eternity. Do whatever you want. Meaning what? That there is nothing we can do, and there is nothing they can do, but to continue their corporeal existence. But we had certain goals. Each and every generation also always had a goal. We somehow unfolded. People were more religious, more believers. They were less. There were less goals. The yearning for something wasn't so great, wasn't that big. People were satisfied with their normal lives. They simply were next to how their cows and sheep were. That's how they were too. And today, it's a shame. As if it's a shame what happened to them, generation, teenagers, etc., etc. But I think that this is exactly our place to ask ourselves, why aren't we thinking about how to prepare an infrastructure for them? Because it was always that way, only now we need to prepare the infrastructure in a new way in terms of the idea itself. Not just build new workplaces for them, make more schools, give them more extracurricular activities, develop more and more. No. That doesn't work anymore. We need more of the same doesn't work anymore. We need to bring them a new framework, new relations, the meaning of life, a new meaning of life for them to get into it and say that, now it's clear to us. What are we doing? What are we living for? What are we coming to? As if they have the tools, inner tools. That are more and different than the ones we live with in our society. As if they were born with the abilities, with the perception that we have no orientation in. For them, it's like some kind of something minor. And so what follows is that they're as if an empty space. What suits them, we didn't prepare for them. And really, it's a generation that's lost. It reminds me about the kind of phones we had in the past and what you have today. The smartphones, where you surf, and it has a completely different technology. And we're like a generation that's seriously lagging behind. Like we're using phones with a dial. These are instruments that don't use the same frequencies. So if going back to the risks, what seems to us as risks, for them it's not even a risk. It's just that, they're examining their own boundaries. Now, what gave me hope is that on this parenting course, I'll learn how to broaden my horizons in a way that I'll be able to see like them. We'll change throughout this course. and we will turn ourselves into that which is suitable for being an infrastructure for our children, because today we're in a state where there can be no connection between us. The connection can be only in terms of here, take, eat this, and go. I have nothing else to give you. Because you have engagements of your own, goals of your own, tastes of your own, etc., etc., everything of your own. But for your body, yeah, please. What you're used to having at your mom's, this I give you. So practically, in this transitional phase, if I see my child doing something that I consider being risky, how do I stop him? How do I talk to him? What do I do? I don't think that it'll help. I have really nothing to say here. Because you still have this kind of thought that in some way you can influence him. I'll put it this way. Suppose your child does something that in your eyes is risky. What are you going to do? Well, it's my obligation to say something. What will you say? That it seems to me dangerous, unpreferable, that instead of that it's better to be engaged in this or that. But again, if we're talking about teenagers, and it depends what teenagers and at what age, whether it's 11 or closer to 20, these are different things. But really? That's a big question. The measure to which parents, and I'm not talking about myself because to begin with, I gave them a pretty, let's call it, traditional education. But from what I see, there is no control. Should we try and understand, should I try and understand what does my child want to achieve through the risk that he's taking? Why is he doing it? What do you want to achieve? Is there room for such a talk? A young person wants to feel that he exists. To exist means to be engaged in different dangerous things, to taste them, to see how much to the right, to the left, up, down, in all directions, how much it comes and broadens, expands his field. That's natural. Look at how small puppies play. They all the time want to, and you know, their mom grabs them and brings them back. And grabs them and brings them back. Nothing you can do. You can't grow without that. Therefore, I don't think that just saying no will help, or just saying something. But by there being some kind of closeness, commitment, to show him how we really regret whatever he's doing, and then maybe by that to limit him in some way. But that's it. Yeah, it is possible to limit him in terms of money or something else. But here we have to talk about each case per se. In short, I don't think so. Until we change and we'll be able to offer them something that will really fill their life, that will give them a direction in life, and some kind of employment or something like that. Without that, there will be nothing. Many times as parents, we think that a good kid is a kid that doesn't take risks, doesn't do dangerous things. He's considered as a good kid, and a bad kid is someone who's constantly looking for those boundaries. Sometimes we also pass this feeling on to the child that he's a bad kid. What kind of relation should we develop toward a child that's trying out these boundaries? We need to understand that to be next to dangerous things gives them a sense of enlivenment, that they're alive. A child needs to climb trees. He needs to try and jump maybe from some high place. He needs it. Without that, a person doesn't feel the world. You get a feeling of the world or of reality altogether only when you stumble into something. If he's afraid of all of these things, he has inner fear. Well, okay, maybe it's good for the parents. But in many things in this regard, he remains then undeveloped. Well, it's not exactly in relation to what we're talking about here, but what we're talking about is that there's nothing you can do with teenagers, but the parents need to get into education as quickly as possible. The risk checking the boundaries and the dangers they take, the risks they take, we need to somehow modify it, but you know, as much as you can, to limit, to handcuff them, you know, it's, and it also doesn't work, right? But also, it's forbidden. Without that, a person will not be fit for life. On a different painful topic, excessive consumption and love for brands. It's like kind of cult around everything that has to do with clothes, beauty, these kinds of things. Here you can't do anything either, because it's the influence of the environment. And what's fashionable today, and what you see today on TV, on the internet, what they talk about, this is what catches teens. But why? Why does it catch teens in such an extreme way? The ego can't allow itself to be less than that, because then it's not a part of the environment, and you're not accepted by the environment, because that's how it's defined by the environment, that this is what you need in order to be like everyone at least, or even more. So, your haircut and clothes and the different brands on your clothes, and one or another way of behavior and this and that. Without that, there's no person. You don't see a person on the inside, but you see what that person presents on himself. So for this, he needs to work out and be in a certain way, and she needs to be, and she needs to have makeup, etc., etc. And all these things, because all in all, this is what the media presents to them as an example, as a role model. What can you do? To deal with it. I don't see that parents have the ability to do that. Only if they're put into a different society environment, that you change the environment, then you can do something. So as long as the environment that compels you, it shapes a person, especially if we're talking about teenagers. Only the environment. Only on condition that we will create some kind of new specific challenge. Suppose we buy them a bicycle and we take them on a flight someplace, or you give them flying lessons and different things like that. But these are pretty limited things for them as well. It's not, you know, something special for them anymore. But nonetheless, it's a possibility. So if I understand correctly, if I can help the environment, just like they're inspired or impressed by an environment that gives them their standards for, or its standards for how they have to be dressed, what kind of haircut do they need to have, etc., etc., to give them a different environment that will give them different values that are better than all of this externality, more exalted. But it's also hard, because everywhere, nonetheless, they have the same advertisements, etc., etc., especially for girls. You know, boys, so be it. But girls, today, teenage boys as well, you know, you need a specific jeans and shoes, and if it's not a brand, then it's a big problem. Another thing is body image, which is the way in which an adolescent perceives themselves, their own body, the way they look, etc., etc. Today it's very important. Yeah, well, today it's something very considerable. There's working out and cosmetic surgery, etc., etc. How is it that our physical appearance became so important in our world? Is this something that I'd like to ask you? Because it's in your generation. It happened in your generation, not in theirs. They already accepted it. They've received it as heritage. It's something that we developed in our generation, of course. In the past, it was only for the aristocrats, for the bohemians, for the elites. And other people, in the past, clothes was something that really defined you. If you're a manual worker, then this is how you dress. If you're more than that, then this is how you dress, etc., etc. Each degree in the social system had their own clothes, including hat and shoes and everything. It was very much defined, just like in the army. And today, because of freedom, and after several revolutions already, then anyone can wear whatever they want, and everyone wants to stand out. Clothing is a language of who am I, what am I. If I dress up as someone more important, then I'll be more important in the eyes of others. That's how they'll accept me. It's very interesting because in our generation, clothing was different. How? In our generation, there were suits and everything, but today, teenagers, you know, give them a t-shirt and jeans. It has to be a brand, but this is what they wear. It doesn't matter where they go, what kind of occasion. It's like one size for everyone. And it's interesting, because on the one hand, there's something that's one size for all kids. Yeah, it's the same. And still, the brands and everything. Same, same. Now, I'd like to ask about the body image itself, you know, thin body, fat body, things like that. It's very difficult. True. It came in as a kind of, there's like a template. Yeah. It's not, what was it? 90-60-90. What is that today? It's like a barrel or something. It's not a body. But it needs to be 50 kilograms, 180 centimeters, and then she's a queen. And it's the same for boys. What can I say? It has to do with the media. That's how they developed it. It's also not that bad, really, because it's better than being obese. But still, we see that being excessively thin, what people come to, the terrible cases that you have. Eating disorders in adolescents, it's something very common. On the one hand, there's excessive eating, because we're in a state where there's everything. And also, all the foods, they're very toxic. and they stay in our body, and we get fat, and there's no physical work, we don't walk, we drive, we don't work physically, but we sit next to a computer, and a person comes home, he doesn't need to heat the house, and he doesn't need to carry buckets of water, and he doesn't need to do 1,000 things that in the past were a must. Clean and maybe work in the garden, to arrange something with the trees and the vegetables. Today you don't have any of that. So he comes home. He sat at work in front of a computer. He came home and he sits in front of the TV or in front of the computer. And so we have a big problem. And all the food is with plenty of calories and sugar. It's a problem. We see in Europe it's like this, in America it's the opposite, everyone's inflated. And still there's nonetheless some kind of inclination to drop it somehow, but still to stand against, it's impossible to resist the fat food, to go against it. It's billions of dollars that's invested into it, and therefore these things, they're shoved everywhere. Among adolescents, besides the food being so accessible and that they're much less physically active, is there something like emotional eating that's typical of teens, like that food compensates for something? Well, that too, of course. It's different habits. It's how many sweet things did we have in our childhood? Chocolate, ice cream, that was it more or less. Where were all these? You know, these different candy bars, all these kinds of things. You didn't have all these things. And therefore, if in the past you had ice cream or chocolate, then, you know, that's it. Tops, you had peanuts, things like that. That's it. So obesity comes actually from these habits of eating plenty of sweets, plenty. And every mother serves it to her children, chips, this, that. Therefore, I think that only through the balance that we reach in our brain through integral education, only then will a person become more intermingled with different thoughts of the environment and not of the media, and he'll balance himself out. He'll be more disconnected of matter, material goods. He'll be more enlivened by his connection with other people. He'll be more influenced by the proper, correct connection with other people. And then, not that it's going to be easier for them, but they simply won't want it. They'll forget about it. People will lose interest in it, taste. And besides, what integral education intends is for people to eat together, for people to be together for many hours, for them to pass on the right behavior and correct proper eating habits to each other. And it's also something that we need to talk about on the workshops themselves. Suddenly what I understood is that it's not only that there's much more of everything and that the teens are more exposed to it all, but it covers for a certain inner need that's not met. And through eating, they're trying to compensate for this need somehow. Now that you said that in integral education, there's something that will cause teens to feel some kind of fulfillment, that naturally they'll feel less need to eat, etc., etc. But also to scrutinize these things. Why are we that way? Why do we want it? Why don't we? Why are we drawn to this and not to that? For them to talk about it. To talk about what? Why are we drawn to sweets and to fast food and to all the junk food and all those things? What do we have as a result? Why do we feel more comfortable? Why can't we ourselves do it, for example? If we're spending time together, right? So, let's prepare, let's make a salad for ourselves. Let's make different things. Let's even barbecue. Let's do something that's healthy. Instead of cola, let's even drink wine. But it's much healthier. Etc., etc. Meaning, let's prepare ourselves together, participate in it together. Let's create new eating habits. Let's help nature. Let's start tasting the true flavors that exist. They don't have that anymore. But, you know, without Coca-Cola, which is the taste of life, without it, they don't feel that they're drinking anything, even though that there's nothing to drink there. You know, when you test it, it's an excellent cleaning substance because it eats everything. It consumes everything. It's interesting that surprisingly such a big company chose their slogan to be the taste of life. Yeah, that's always how it is, one against the other. The biggest lie is always beneficial. They found a true need that we're searching for, the taste of life. What is that taste of life that teens are really looking for, instead of which they turn to chocolates and sweets? What are they looking for? They're not looking. It's a habit. It's like with drugs. First of all, they're introduced to you, and then you can't do without. The sugar levels are high already, and they need to maintain them that way. Of course, there are also extreme cases of body image where teens reach a state of anorexia, bulimia, and in general, tattoos and whatnot. It's limitless what man can do to his body. And it's from generations ago. It didn't start now. Yeah, but now it became more severe. Yeah, but the inclination towards it was always there. Only in the past, it was in the form of signs. Meaning, I couldn't just put any sign I feel like on my body because it was like a medal, like something that differentiates me from others. Do I deserve to put some kind of symbol on myself or not, or even put a bone here, or a ring in my ear, or whatever? Whoever deserves to does. Whoever doesn't, doesn't. Today, everyone, the main thing is to be special. Yeah? And here you can also understand women, that it's natural for a woman to have this kind of inclination for a man. And here we're coming to another thing, the inclination that men have to put on makeup, to make themselves prettier than women. Here you already have hormonal changes at the very basis of the situation, of the matter. Long hair of different kinds, and earrings, and rings, and other signs. They also do their eyebrows and whatnot. It already became some kind of close to sex change. It's so much so that, or to the contrary, how much bite he wants to frighten other people. It all stems from inner emptiness, or really inner mutational changes. These are real mutations. We see the changes there are and the inclination towards sex, from sex to sex. It's a topic per se that we'll talk about. Yeah, it's all a result, first and foremost, that stems from food. Food, first and foremost. And that it's so open and free. And there are people, and really the situation became worse, if you can call it worse. Meaning that the quantity of people with different inclinations grew. But also that they can attract people to it that don't have an inclination towards it. In each of us, there's both an inclination towards this and towards that. And here it's a matter of education. Besides natural innate inclinations, it's also possible to change. It's also possible to change it when we start feeding ourselves with different wrong foods, also different spiritual foods, meaning like Hollywood and things like that, if it becomes a norm, and even more than a norm, meaning not only that it's the normal state, but that it's the preferred state, like all the bohemians and the media, etc., etc. And so then a person starts saying that it's preferable to look that way, that it's worthwhile. And then at least externally, in terms of their appearance, they have these different signs, characteristics on themselves, and also it's not illegal if a person who has these kinds of inclinations, if he takes a person who doesn't have such inclinations and somehow attracts them to it, It's all considered freedom, under the name of freedom. I'm not saying anything in favor or against, but the phenomena is something well known to everyone. And again, I think that it's only the general atmosphere that allows everyone to be correctly connected, correctly, properly connected, will cure it. Let's put it this way. We need to invent such a remedy, such a cure in our connection that will restore order in each and every one. A kind of an upper force that arranges everything, and not we ourselves say to do things one way or another. This is what we need. So, of course, we hope that throughout this course we'll really learn how to do it and how to come to that remedy, but what's important to me as a mom in that intermediate phase until we reach that cure that will balance out the entire system where everyone will get their own balance, to nonetheless see how can we deal with the different states that are becoming revealed. We can't. We can't. There's nothing we can do. Nothing we can do. To the contrary, if we'll start tackling it, then the entire public will turn against us. Well, even if not to tackle it, but to understand, because understanding, it allows you, it's very hard to agree with many of the phenomena that exist in teens on the one hand. On the other hand, it's something that you can correct only by the power of the group, of society, of connection that we generate in the center of the new society. There is no other solution. You need to calm the parents down, be patient, all in all for a few weeks, until we get correctly organized amongst ourselves, and then the teens will want to be a part of it. They'll want to become a part of it because by that they open their soul. I don't exactly understand the process. The parents should calm down for a few weeks because how, what? For the sake of argument, we're on a parenting course here. Well, parenting course, it depends what you mean by it. We see that we have teens and we want to improve their life, our life. Well, if you tell me that it's a parenting course that you come to once a week, then that's something else, because I see the public that I'm talking to as if are unemployed people. No, we're employed people that come to a parenting course once a week. So you're saying, first of all, the process is to be patient. Yeah, we don't touch anything, we only learn together how to change our awareness. You're looking at me that way. Why? What happens? A change in your awareness. Can you break it down? That we learn. We study what man is, man's character, gradual development, different periods in our development, what do we see in our development. When I look at the different stages of our development, then I also can make some kind of an approximation from the past, the future, etc., etc. So what do I see in the last 100 years? Where is it all headed? What changes are taking place in these countries, in those countries, with culture, with education, with religion, with work, with different things? The attitude towards man, the country, the world, the cancellation of borders, etc., etc. Meaning, without that, we simply can't go forward. And we need to accompany all these things with workshops, seminars, activities. And by that, we first and foremost educate the parents. But the parents came out of concern for how can they deal with the teens. Right, because otherwise I wouldn't have come to this course. So the intro needs to be not like an intro like you take in the university. A pretty short one. Suppose 3 or 4 months, once a week, and you complete the process. You know what you need for it. And then we start scrutinizing. What should this new society be? That's on the parenting course. Yeah? The truth is that all the courses are very similar. What needs to be the new society? In light of all the data that we're discovering now in our world. Unemployment is on the rise. Bankruptcy for the different workplaces, economic crisis, financial crisis, crisis in the family, crisis everywhere. So what do we see here? What kind of society are we drawn to? Meaning, are we coming to? What's attracting us or pushing us doesn't matter. And then we can understand. And this is something that I talked about several times, that taking into consideration all of these givens, this data, then the future society is one in which people work only in order to provide themselves with their basic rational needs, and the rest of their time, they're free. And what do we do with this understanding? This is how we need to arrange the new world. But wait, this is how the world of tomorrow will be. Now, from what we see today, is that people have no work, that a profession is not a profession, that to advance is just a dream. But if you want to be an artist, great. You can be an artist this way or that way, it doesn't matter. Meaning, workplaces for things like culture, for, you know, for leisure time, let's call it, then you can do it anyway. But if you're talking about work, there is no work, and there will be no work. There will be work only for 5% of the population of the world, that's it. You can't stop progress. As much as it's being stopped from above, nonetheless, it breaks out, erupts, and this is how it is. And if not that, then nature will force us one way or another by lack of energy, etc., etc. So, what happens next? Next is that people will be free. Free. And for the people that are free now, we need to give them something to do. When? Now already. But I have no free people now. I have teenagers at home. Okay, at home. What is he doing at home? So that's what I'm asking. You said this is the first stage in the course. We understand the trend in the past 100 years. Then we start depicting the kind of society that we'll develop into in the upcoming years. Great, we have this picture. Now, if you're saying that we're living in a country in which there's no unemployment yet, and teenagers have what to do, then that's something else. No, I'm not talking about unemployment. I'm only saying that I have teens at home that I don't know how to deal with. And you're talking to me about the process in which humanity understands the process that it went through and what is it headed towards. Look, teens are those that are standing on the threshold to the new world. So you need to know what the new world is. So if not today, then tomorrow or the next day, it will come. If you live without that perspective, then you have nothing to give the younger generation. Okay, suppose we develop this perspective and we depict it, the picture of the future world. Right, so if you live it out already, then you have what to talk to them about. Okay, so suppose I got this insight on the course. Yeah, but that you really live it out. You, now, by this perception, not just a depiction, but your inner perception changed. You change from the inside. So today you become smarter and more advanced than they are. You can really be great next to them that are small. So you're no longer a dinosaur that's lagging behind. To the contrary, you're more advanced than they are. You're like a dad taking his child, his little son, by his hand, even though that he's this big. And you lead him. It's already a different kind of approach. This is what you wanted. Without that, how can you turn to them? But what do I turn to them with? With the understanding of the tomorrow. But for that, you need to understand the systems of nature, the systems in society. How does it work? Where is it headed? So when you turn to the teens, you have what to say about the tomorrow. Right. And you're turning to them today and you don't demand anything. What do you mean? Because there's nothing to demand of them. There's nothing to demand. You need to give them an environment that by it they will change. I don't understand. Education. The education that you want to introduce to these adolescents, to your teens. It's by example, through the environment, something that reaches everyone, and by that example, a person changes. This means education.
Okay.
So you need to build such an environment, such an atmosphere, at home, in schools, everywhere, wherever they are, that they will start changing. In what direction? Towards the next new state that you've learned, that you're familiar with, that you feel already. Can you break it down a bit so I'll better understand? The relations between people, why do they need to change? Man's attitude toward nature, toward himself, toward work, toward the family, towards everything. It all changes. Is there some kind of common denominator to all these changes? Yes. Man becomes connected to the entire world. This is the kind of inclination they have. Only they don't know how to express it.
As
So I need to envelop the teen in an atmosphere that already today starts guiding them toward that future picture that humankind is developing toward. That the common denominator for all of it is that man becomes interconnected with the entire world. Yeah. As a teen, I'm already interconnected with the entire world. No. As a teen, much more than you are. I have the entire world at the palm of my hand in my smartphone. In your smartphone, but not in you. What do you mean, not in you? Not in you, in your smartphone. There's a difference. What is the difference? The difference is that you're not built that way, that you're connected to the entire world. You don't understand the world. You don't understand its development. You don't understand the new stage that we're entering. Why is everyone plunging into a crisis? Why are there bankruptcies? Why is everything happening? You need to know the world. You're the teenager, right? You're my son. Then this world's for you. For me, that's it. Really, in a few years, for me, it's over. I'm done with this world. You're just starting with it. And, what, you know what it is? What do you know? How to call a few of your friends that are like you on your smartphone? That's what you know how to do. Are we talking about that? You don't understand the system that you exist in. World means the system. The system of nature, of society, of everything the way it is now and how it's unfolding to the future. Taking you, whether you like it or not, you're not familiar with this process, the forces, and your participation here that can be positive or negative. This means that you're familiar with the world. That it's in the palm of your hand. And if I don't have the strength for all of this philosophy, that's for my dad, for my grandfather. No. That's how it was in the past. I mean, were you to come to me today with what you're saying, you have like 3 seconds to interest me. Because you're limited. In the past, it was really something philosophical. Right? For my grandpa, for, you know, for them. Today, say 7 words. You have 7 words to catch my attention. You can write me 7 words. That's it. You have enough room on your smartphone. So listen up. So how will you interest me? That's the question. No. That's not the problem. The problem is, unless you know what's new in the world compared to what was, there's nothing for me to talk to you about. Just get the problem. You relate to the world like a dinosaur. Me? The teenager? Wait a minute. Because you're saying history, I learned it in school, geography. I'm saying that it's all nonsense. The entire school is nonsense because you are not taught about the new world. We are in a new world, in a new generation. Like, there was nothing like it before. That now there's a change. Dramatic change. Drastic change. Crucial change in the world. Like, there was none before, like it before. And that for, therefore that you're saying that, yeah, it's for philosophers. It was. It's true. Because man developed in a normal, instinctive way, lives his life, has children, advances in life, until he dies. And that's that. If you come to the cemetery, you'll see that there's like this machine that digs the graves, and every day they fill them up. Everything on a conveyor. But this is how it was in the past. The difference between the generations was a bit technology, things that aren't crucial, meaning man didn't need to change his paradigm to life. Because it was clear to him, this my place of work, this where I live, this where I get married, this where I have children, this where I die. Everything's clear, in one way or another. Today, it's not like that at all. You don't have that. The world turned upside down. Why does that interest me? Because you're new. You want to succeed in life. I'm telling you, like a grandpa to his little nephew, you want to succeed in life. I'll tell you a secret about what the world today is. It's something that you didn't learn from your parents, or in kindergarten, or in school, or anywhere. Now I'm going to tell you a secret, quietly. No. And then you'll succeed. Because you are entering a system like Alice in Wonderland. Really so. That everything's new. Trees are talking, animals, this, that, really. You saw the movie? Yeah. It had a strong impact on you? I can't remember. It was a long time ago. So it's really so. So, Grandpa, what's the secret before you go 2 minutes forward? No, no, not 2 minutes. It's just that in 2 minutes, I'm out of here. So you'll be gone, and you'll see how you'll fall. And you'll come to me. So what's the secret? To understand, know the system that you're in. The secret of life will become revealed to you in that. You know the system, that you acquire it, that you're the host, and you can twist and turn the entire world if you'll know how the system's built, the new world that didn't exist in the past. No philosophers, scientists, chemists, no matter who and what. Everything that you had until today, they can't tell you about the new world. None of them can. And the fact is that none of them is inventing anything now for the new world. Everyone's in a crisis. Science, technology, everything's in crisis. And what I'm selling you, well, not selling, teaching, passing on to you with love, is the understanding of the system. You're taking both of these reins, and you're the boss. That's it. Or otherwise, go find your way, suffer like everyone. And I'm not telling you to work hard, but to only know the system. You know, when you come, you know what to push in order to get fulfillment, pleasure, success. This is what I come to you with. Now, take a few media people, a few publicity people, for them to make a lot of fuss around it. We are selling, you know, success. It doesn't matter how. They know how to dress it in words. But here, it's not a lie, actually, but the truth. Grandpa, say, we have 30 seconds left until I'm out of here. What would you like for me to remember from everything that you said, because I didn't exactly understand everything? That I have something that can help you to be completely successful in life, instead of all the tattoos and these earrings and the way you style your hair or whatever. I'm selling you something that is 1,000,000% more efficient. Great. Come visit me again. I'll make you a cup of tea. Thank you, Nitsa. Thank you for being with us. Thank you, Dr. Lightman. Till next time, we wish you all the best.
Michael Lateman, on Quora, what are some things we can do to help ease our anxiety about the future? To understand that it is just anxiety and not reality. We should look into what we have the ability to do today, understanding that any anxieties about the future are about what might happen later, and accordingly we should calm down. Fearing the future gives us absolutely nothing. We nevertheless do not know what will happen tomorrow. So why should we get anxious with various worries and concerns? Based on the video Anxiety About the Future, A Kabbalist's View with Kabbalist Dr. Michael Lateman. Written, edited by students of Kabbalist Dr. Michael Lateman.